Welcome back, listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I am so happy to have you join us again. Today, my guest is Melissa Mitri, a fellow registered dietitian. Melissa and I dish about how we define health, the current trends and science around weight loss medications, and creating a sustainable approach for our clients who have been struggling to meet their goals. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Melissa Mitri, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to spend with me.
Dina, thank you so much for having me.
We are going to start off on the introduction point that I usually tend to lead in with, like an origin story. I have come across your name quite often on a lot of our mutual Facebook groups because you and I are registered dietitians, but I don't think we've ever met in person or virtually, if I'm not mistaken.
No, we actually haven't. I think that I had found you through one of the Facebook groups. I saw that you were posting and you were planning out your calendar for your podcast episodes. And so that's how I found you. And I started listening to your podcast from then on.
So, oh, that makes me happy. That makes me happy. I always say this when we have episodes like this, that, you know, it's kind of fun to embrace the outside world, the virtual space. It can sometimes not be the greatest place to be in, depending on what kind of discussions are out there. But then you come across people like us who we get to engage, interact, and we might not have ever crossed paths if that's not the case. So thank you again. So Melissa, walk us through kind of how you got to where you are right now. I've mentioned before that I'm a second career dietitian and I've been in this profession for about 7 or 8 years now. What led you into the world of nutrition?
Yeah. So I actually back in college, I've been a dietitian for a little over 16 years now. And so when I first started back in college, I actually was a psychology major, then a nursing major. And then, so really always health related. But then as I pursued my nursing career, I realized I just didn't think that was for me. I couldn't really picture myself doing it when I started working in the hospitals. And so, but I knew I wanted to do something with health and working directly with people. So I started learning about, from my advisor, I went to UConn, University of Connecticut. And so I spoke to an advisor and I remember she opened up this giant book of all of these different majors and she showed me nutrition and she's like, what about dietetics? And I actually didn't really know too much about that at the time. I was a sophomore in college at the time. And but when she explained what a dietitian did, it sounded perfect for me because I always loved learning about nutrition. I was kind of fascinated with how much food can improve our health. And so, and also the fact that I would be working directly with people. So I knew I didn't want to work like in a lab or in that type of setting. I wanted to be working more directly with people, helping them, and also have that sort of scientific, side of me, to be able to use as well. So since then I pursued, I became a dietitian and then I worked in hospitals, kind of like traditional clinical roles for 10 plus years and, came to a point where I always knew I wanted to, you know, kind of create my own path and start my own business. So my particular passion is in weight management. And really what drove me to that the most is, working in hospitals, especially in outpatient counseling with many patients who were trying to lose weight and struggling and seeing, that there was a big disconnect with, you know, all of the fad diets out there and kind of a lot of the ways that I saw people were losing weight, that it just wasn't sustainable. And so I knew that I wanted to be able to counsel my clients the way that I wanted to, and then a way that I knew would be more helpful for them. So I started my own practice. I've been doing that for about 5 years. I have a virtual practice where I work with mainly women who want to lose weight in a sustainable way. So mostly people that have tried a lot of things in the past and maybe lost some weight, but struggle to keep the weight off or to find a more realistic, sustainable way of eating. So so that's a little bit what I do. I'm also a freelance writer. So that's another bigger part of what I do now too. Over the past several years where I am a writer for several publications and also healthcare professionals and healthcare brands, supplement brands, food brands, just helping to, support the use of their products and really educate their consumer about different topics that may be helpful for them to learn.
As is often the case, and I mentioned this to you before we hit record, I take lots and lots of notes. So of course I have a few things to ask about the beginnings of your academic journey, because a lot of what you went into with the, you mentioned the psychology major, is that what you said? Psychology, and
yeah,
also
yep.
the nursing, where that really does play a role with being able to support, I think, people with whom you're working now, because not only in the time that you were doing clinical things, but also we've mentioned plenty of times in episodes previously that it's never about the food. A lot of times it is about past behaviors, traumas, in the case of maybe what your clients are going through as well, chronic dieting, breaking old habits. So how much does that psychology, part of the knowledge that you have, play a role in what you're currently doing?
Yeah, so definitely plays a big, really big part in my counseling sessions, because I really always kind of keep that in the back of my mind in the conversations with my clients, because they're always, as you said, there's always is, you know, some psychology behind the way that we eat, and we all eat for different reasons. We all, you know, there's always some sort of an emotional, component to eating, whether it's positive or negative. And so a big part of what I do is helping my clients to kind of figure out why they may overeat, or maybe why they eat the way that they do at certain times of the day, and figuring out, you know, what are the barriers? What are the ways that we can, you know, find healthier coping mechanisms and manage stress and sleep and some of these other factors that may be playing a role into the why behind the eating? Because really, that's what a lot of those, a lot of the more sort of standard diet programs, while they may, a lot of them do promote healthy eating, and there's not necessarily something wrong with, you know, with those programs, but they don't address, a lot of them don't address that component. And that component is really necessary in the long term, because life happens, things come up, stressful situations and environments that we're in, that we need to be able to sustain those same habits in every situation.
Just out of curiosity, in your practice, are you taking self-pay, or do you do insurance-based as well?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So I accept about three or four insurance plans. So about 70% of my clients are through insurance, where most of those clients are, you know, their appointments are fully paid. And even with me seeing them virtually, which is really great. So
I'm asking that because, especially when they do have the journey of it, depending on how long or how much they have to manage their current weight, but also potentially to coexisting chronic conditions as well that might be affecting them too. It's nice to be able to meet with somebody who can help support them and be able to guide them in a direction and be able to see them a little bit more long term, versus unfortunately the way the American healthcare system is sometimes, that there might be some limitations on certain visits if somebody doesn't actually have a diagnosis or a referral. So people are finding you through either their healthcare providers, or you're in their directories, I assume, if that's the case as well.
Yes. Yeah. So, I think it surprisingly a large amount, it's not a big percentage of them are actually finding me through their healthcare, their insurance provider, as much as more referrals are, or finding me online. And that's sort of shifted over time as I sort of built up my online presence more and my business and my, you know, sort of connections. But yes, yeah, so, and, but luckily, and I know it varies depending on the state, in Connecticut, the insurance where I'm based is the insurance coverage is pretty good with the insurance companies that I do accept, which is Anthem Blue Cross, Cigna, and Connecticut. Those are the three main that I accept. And usually, especially with Anthem Blue Cross, the visits are unlimited, even, you know, coding and billing under preventative care codes. So even if there's not another medical diagnosis, then oftentimes they're fully covered for unlimited visits, which is really great. You know, because as you said, I don't like to put, you know, sort of a cap on how many visits that someone should have, because, you know, it's definitely dependent on the person. I usually suggest to all of my clients a minimum of 3 months worth of visits at Vandermeer. And most of them, you know, we work together for about 6 months or so on average, because it takes time. You know, we don't want to rush the process. It's a gradual weight loss process that I recommend, because it's more sustainable. And so, and then it doesn't put all that stress on the person to have to feel like they have to make all of the changes overnight.
That is very true. You know, a lot of the things that come up sometimes as far as like themes in our discussions are about really being patient with ourselves and the process of things, that life is never just a linear progression. There's a lot of hills and valleys. Mm-hmm. Things change, whether it's hormonal fluctuations on the more cellular level, or, you know, season to season, or if you have an illness or an injury, and now you're maybe thrown off of your game, of your routine, and allowing yourself just to be okay with some of the changes that might happen, and that it does take time. And even, you know, 3 to 6 months, as far as you and I are probably concerned, is probably even still such a very small drop in the bucket when it comes to really helping somebody undo or relearn or learn new habits of things that they might not have ever been implementing before, because it's about trial and error in that case. And so what would you say, as far as maybe if you have a typical patient or client with whom you're working, what might be their primary concern in addition to the weight loss, but also maybe even stemming from other discussions that they've had with their healthcare providers? And what I think I'm really driving at is the conversation that they come to you in their mind already, and how you might be able to break it down, maybe even being a little bit more sensitive about their situation, or having to re-explain things that might not have been correctly informing them in some of their past sessions with other healthcare providers who are not dietitians.
Yeah. So a lot of times when clients are first coming to me, you know, one of their biggest goals is they want to lose weight and they want to feel better. They want to have more energy. And so it's not always a specific amount of weight that they want to lose. Usually they're looking for something more sustainable, and they are, you know, okay and sort of accepting of the gradual approach, because they many times have tried some of the other faster approach diets in the past. In terms of their experience, oftentimes before coming to work with me, some of them have worked with other dietitians before. Many have usually, you know, of course, like seen their doctor. And as you said, like maybe their doctor brought up different health concerns. A lot of the times they, you know, the doctors, because for many reasons, they're very busy, and they might sort of give sort of generic advice that, you know, you have to lose weight. They don't really tell them how, or they may tell them that they, you know, just need to eat less and move more, that type of thing. So, I think that a lot of times there's a lot of confusion, from all different, you know, many of my clients, regardless of their level of education, is a confusion on what is healthy eating and what does that really look like? Because I think if, you know, the way society is that it's like black or white. It's like this food is either good for you or it's bad for you. And there's not really any gray areas. And that's really in reality what nutrition really isn't the case. So it's kind of just helping them to figure out like where these beliefs come from. Sometimes they may also have a lot of beliefs from their family or from the way that they were brought up, and kind of going through, you know, when we first start working together, I send them a very detailed form where I find out more about, you know, what have they tried in the past? What are their biggest challenges? Like, what are their beliefs, so that I can understand and be able to have a good starting point as to, okay, like, how do we kind of move forward in a gradual way to figure out, you know, what is the best way of eating for you? Because there's not one way for everyone. It's really, you know, what is one sort of standard approach is just focusing more on what to eat versus what not to eat. I think that's like the biggest thing to try to simplify and try to help people improve their relationship with food and not feel that it has to be stressful or negative.
Yeah. And I love what you're saying there too. That comes up in a lot of my client sessions too, of removing the restrictive approach and seeing what is missing. And for the first time, allowing them to say, oh, I can actually add something to my meal. I can add something to my plate. All right, mm-hmm. Melissa, let's nerd out a little bit for a minute here. Let's talk about the science of all the things behind here. Regardless of how somebody found themselves in a position where maybe they don't feel like they're in their ideal body or quote unquote, you know, healthy frame in the more kind of like physical space as well, whatever got them to that part. We hear a lot of times in the dietetics profession and in the wellness profession too, of like food is medicine or food as medicine. And I often try to just encourage people to just be a little bit conscientious about using that phrase, because sometimes medicine plays a role. Like, you have to have conventional, traditional treatment plans in addition to some of your lifestyle habit modifications, that not everything might lead you in that direction, or at least to kind of kickstart that. So in your world right now, as specializing in weight loss, share with us a little bit about some of the things that we're hearing about with these weight loss medications, the pros and cons of some of them, and maybe even what do they do? Is it a long-term approach? Is it a short-term approach? Is it a combination of both changes in habits as well as taking medicine?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. So that funny that you said food as medicine, because I just attended a webinar shortly before our recording that about food as medicine from food as medicine doctors. And then they were talking a lot about that. So, but yes, but in terms of, so all of these weight loss medications that are really popular now and being prescribed very often. So there's a lot of them. And I think, well, I will say to start before we kind of dig a little bit deeper is that these medications need to be taken along with lifestyle modifications. So it doesn't, if you decide to go on one of these medications, it doesn't change the fact that the lifestyle changes still need to happen to the same extent, because, you know, for many reasons, it's a medication. And so the fact that it is a medication as a, you know, right now, the physicians that are prescribing these weight loss medications are treating it as a long-term approach. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions that we have in terms of, you know, can a person come off of these medications without gaining the weight back so easily? And I think there's more research needs to be done there. But as of right now, it's being treated as a long-term approach, which means that, you know, the diet and the exercise, all the other components, also should be a long-term approach and kind of worked alongside of that in order to get the best results. Because even though the doctors are treating it as a long-term approach, many times for many different reasons, it may not be feasible for a long-term approach. So your insurance may stop covering the medication or there's a shortage of the medications, or you may experience side effects from the medication, even if you are losing weight from it. The side effects may kind of outweigh the, you know, the pros that you may be getting from it. So if you have to come off of them, it's really important to have the tools to know what to do so that you don't regain that back. And, you know, and if you worked hard to lose the weight, just like with anything else, you know, in the past, if you've tried without medications or not, you know, every time that you lose weight and then regain it back, it becomes a little bit harder and more challenging to then lose the weight again. So in the best thing you can do is try to take a more gradual approach with the lives. If you do take the medications with the lifestyle, so that if you do have to come off of them, even if you gain a little bit of weight back, if you already practice or in the habit of practicing those healthy lifestyle changes, then it's going to be easier and you're going to be able to know what to do to maintain that weight as much as possible.
Out of the side effects, I mean, however in depth you want to get into them, what are some of the more common side effects that we see? Because there's a blockage of a pathway of something that is happening where they're not absorbing something or not metabolizing something, I'm assuming. And then are there certain, you know, regular issues that might come up across the board when they start taking these medicines?
Before we're going to go into the side effects, just a brief sort of explanation into how these medications work is they kind of work in two different, they target two different pathways. So there's two hormones that these medications try to mimic. So one of them is called GLP-1, which is the most common one. And that stands for glucagon-like peptide. And then there's GIP. So there's medications that are just GLP-1, and then there's ones that are what's called dual agonists, where it targets the GLP-1 hormone and the GIP hormone pathway. And the way that they work is they help reduce blood sugar. So they target your insulin. They help make your body more sensitive to insulin, which is particularly important for people that have diabetes. It can be more helpful even for that. And then they also help to make you full. So they slow down digestion, which in turn keeps you full. It helps with satiety and makes it easier to eat less. So those are kind of the two ways in which they work. And then in turn, what happens with some of the side effects, the most common side effects are really because of that sort of delayed gastric emptying and how it makes you feel more full because it slows digestion. And then in turn, some of the most common side effects are digestive symptoms like nausea, vomiting, constipation is a big one. diarrhea, and just overall like bloatedness. So those are like the most common symptoms that are mild. There are a good amount of people that do experience those symptoms. It is more common in the beginning. So in the first 2 to 3 weeks, and then many times it subsides. But other times it doesn't. So it's important to know that these are the, you know, common side effects to expect. So that if they do occur, you know, there are definitely things that you can do. You don't necessarily want to just come off of it right away, but speak to your doctor, work with a dietitian, and then know that there are certain things you can do with your diet to also help with the symptoms, which I could, you know, I can go over a bit more too.
Yeah, I appreciate us sharing this because whoever's out there listening, you know, a lot of times I believe patients sometimes will look towards their healthcare providers as the authority figures. And sometimes, unfortunately, they don't get to have a lot of discussions around informed consent or understanding the side effects. Or if they go to pick up at the pharmacy their prescription, you know, nobody's sitting. My mom's definitely doing this, but I don't know a lot of people who will open up the insert and read through all of that fine print of, you know, what the statistics are as far as side effects and, you know, what to expect on this particular medication. So thank you for sharing all of that because it helps to be educated as a patient if you're unaware of the questions to ask. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah, tell me a little bit too about like what some of the challenges might be if you're working in tandem with somebody of helping them with the lifestyle modifications, but also they might be on this medication. Or is there anything that usually comes up that you can see as a challenge?
Yeah. So a couple of things that have come up because I've worked with several clients that have started these medications or I've been on them for several months. And usually in the beginning, especially I think it's something that I often see is that because it curbs your hunger, sometimes it actually can curb hunger too much where the person like really, they struggle to eat at all. And so it kind of just removes their desire to eat. And again, this affects people in different ways. But kind of on, you know, one end of the spectrum, it can definitely decrease that, you know, where I, you know, what can help be helpful is kind of putting the person on a schedule and sort of like smaller, more frequent meals in that case. So if they don't really have those hunger cues, or the desire to eat, then they're just eating a little bit less, but more frequently. And that can also help with the potential side effects of nausea, and bloat by having those smaller meals. So that's something that I've seen often come up, and it's important to note because I think that, you know, I've seen a lot of people that want, you know, to be on the medications, of course, want to lose weight and they want to eat less. They want to have something helping them to do that. But if you're eating too little, that can cause other problems. It can cause micronutrient deficiencies, so vitamin and mineral deficiencies that that we're seeing in the literature that is very common, and also dehydration because it also, while it also makes you feel less hungry, it also curbs your thirst sort of signals too. So a lot of people end up drinking less water and fluids in general, which is a big cause of the constipation too, indirectly. So. So those are things to keep in mind. Kind of the biggest things that I see is the, you know, decreased food intake and water intake, which could be, it could be to an extreme. So, really, you know, when, so if somebody is going to start on these medications, really working with a dietitian from the get-go to know that if these things come up, they kind of have the tools and know what to do to manage it. So they're still staying, you know, you still want to stay in a calorie deficit. You need to, you know, be below your maintenance needs to lose weight, but you don't want to go too low. And then you end up having deficiencies or muscle loss. Muscle loss is another big side effect that usually occurs after being on the medications longer. So after a month or two, that's another one of the most common things that we see is because you're losing weight quickly. Also, the medications itself can, there are a few different mechanisms behind it, but can actually directly cause lean muscle loss. And so that's something also to keep in mind because that lowers your metabolism over time. It's not good for your overall health and longevity. And so keeping that in mind, making sure, again, you have a good plan in place for eating enough protein and for doing enough strength training exercises to try to combat that potential side effect.
I was actually just going to ask you about that. Other lifestyle habits that you tend to focus on that are of importance in a more well-rounded way without solely focusing on diet and nutrition. What are some of your guidelines there for your patients and your clients?
So in terms of, so really I think of it as diet and exercise work together, and it's very personalized, but when it comes to diet, again, focusing on what to eat more of versus what to restrict. So I always say that, like, there's no bad foods. It's more about, you know, how are you feeling after you're eating that food? How are you feeling physically and mentally? How much energy is it giving you? And kind of learning and tracking it in that way so you can see what works for you. But really overall, a higher protein, higher fiber diet, not necessarily super low in carbs, but again, everyone's a little bit different than that with that, depending on your activity level and how much carbs you need. But focusing more on protein and fiber, because that helps with satiety. And then that also is helpful for when, if you are taking those weight loss medications, because again, you need more protein. The guidelines are, as of right now, to, you should have at least 1.3 grams per kilogram of protein, for when you are on these medications. And that is the case even if you're trying to lose weight without these medications, because you want to maintain your muscle mass as you are losing weight. You, the goal is to lose mostly fat mass versus muscle mass. So focusing on getting in more high protein foods, fiber from fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and again, which are carbs. So carbs are not bad. They're actually very nourishing. And then protein from, you know, lean proteins, eggs, chicken, fish, beans, legumes. There's a lot of different options, and just helping them to figure out how to fit it in, you know, how to fit it into their day, how to kind of, you know, figure out what their meal is going to look like. Because a lot of times I think, you know, we say, you know, eat more protein, but then it's like, well, how do you do that? You know, like, how much protein do I actually need, and how do I break it up, you know, with my meals and my snacks? So I like to, you know, oftentimes with clients, show a visual. I help, you know, I create like sort of like a sample day for them so they can see, just as an example in the guide, what does this look like? Like, how much protein should I have per meal, and how do I break it up to make sure that I have, you know, they have steady energy throughout the day. So that's a little bit about the diet. And then the exercise, again, is very individualized. It's always best to have a combination of both cardio and strength training. I think that I see a lot of times that many times when women are trying to lose weight, that the focus is always more heavily on cardio. And that's, and I have to say, like, I have to admit that I love cardio too. So like, I can understand that. I'm a runner and I like prefer to do cardio. So, but, and a lot of people are like that, but it's, you need to do both, and you need, and the key is just finding ways to enjoy both and fit it in. So, because the cardio, you know, kind of has one purpose, or it's, you know, it's helping produce those endorphins and good for mental health and burns fat. But the strength training is going to keep your metabolism high over time. It's more of the long-term game. It's more, you know, maintaining your muscle, helping you to stay lean as you're losing weight. That's going to make you strong. And it also makes you feel empowered. I feel like when you do strength training, it could be a lot of fun if you have good music on, and again, just finding a way to fit it in. So again, like, I help my clients to kind of figure out how to fit it in. So that might look like, you know, cardio a few days a week and strength training a few days a week, and doing like an every other day type of thing. Or if it could be like you know, do them both together and then take more rest days. So there is, the research shows that there's not right or wrong when it comes to that and fitting them both in. It's more about just how you can do both, and making sure that you need at least one or two rest days. So I always stress that with clients too, because I think a lot of people, sometimes can overdo it. Like when they're trying to actively lose weight and feel like they have to exercise every day. And that's actually counterintuitive. When you do it too much, then your body doesn't have time to rest and recover. And that's a big part of the process of seeing the results that you're looking for.
Exactly. You know, I'm making some notes here that I think a lot of the guidance you're giving are, is pretty applicable to quite a variety of different populations, where we have, if in case you, again, you know, with medical clearance and talking to your healthcare providers, I always usually put a disclaimer here anyway, that we're not your dietitian. So please make sure you're checking in to make sure you're clear to do these things. But if ever is the case that you don't recognize hunger and fullness cues, whether, you know, like I work with a lot of students who go from class to class just drinking coffee all day and they don't know when they're hungry, setting yourself up on a schedule is really helpful. Like, just, you know, every 3.5 hours or so, let an alarm go off, grab a bite, a snack, a something. Keeping hydrated is very helpful too. especially if you aren't including more fibrous foods, because that can keep you from getting constipated, as you mentioned before. The increasing of strength training or resistance training or whatever you enjoy doing with helping manage your muscle mass, also we see as well in the older population, can help with reducing falls and fractures, helps with balance and stability, and just is a great way to invest in the future you. So if, you know, we're not asking you to become bodybuilders, we're just asking you to just maintain that overall muscle mass, which I really appreciate that. And the rest days also, you know, talk a little bit too about self-care, because there's a lot of changes, I think, as well, when somebody is both inwardly and outwardly being seen in a different shape or size, or readjusting whatever their prior habits were with whatever, you know, either self-talk or maybe comments that they've had from family members that could be somewhat negative. That's also an adjustment too. And so being able to provide some self-care guidance, I think, might also be helpful of what to expect along their journey or how to field comments that might come up. Do you have any guidance in that respect as well, Melissa?
I could talk forever about self-care, but but before we dive into that, I think in terms of the comments to address that question, I think, you know, comments, on someone's weight, whether, you know, intended to be positive or negative, I think a lot of times for people, it can often be taken as negative. And even if somebody says, I've had a lot of clients that have said, you know, as they start to lose weight, when people notice that, and then it doesn't actually always feel good when somebody comments and says, oh, you lost weight, and like where they may be well-intentioned. But the reality is that, you know, we really don't want to comment on anyone's weight, because you don't know what led to that weight change, whether it's a weight gain or a weight loss. We really don't know their story. And everyone has their own personal story, right? Like I've worked with some clients that have lost too much weight and, you know, or maybe had an eating disorder and then needed to work on that. And so somebody telling them, oh, you look great for losing weight, like that's not really helpful. And then on the other end too, like if you, gained weight, then, regardless, you know, I know that I've had clients that their family members comment on their weight and, or comment on what they're eating, and say, you know, things like, oh, you shouldn't eat that, or should you really be eating that? And that type of, those types of comments can be really hurtful. I think the biggest thing is like when somebody is commenting and they think that they're being helpful, it usually, can actually be more harmful in that person's relationship with their food and with them, their own body. And so what I try to tell clients for any of those situations is to, you know, really remember why, what they want and what they're focusing on and what weight they feel are best. Because a lot of times the weight that they're, you know, maybe their doctor or their BMI chart tells them they should be is not the weight that's best for them and is not the weight that they know. And maybe they've been there before, and they want to be somewhere in the middle, and that's what feels best and most realistic for them too. So, really just bringing them back to, if they hear any of these types of comments, or if there's, you know, just kind of trying to navigate the conversation with that person and just say like, well, I feel good with what I'm doing. Like I feel good and this is working for me, and not feeling like you have to explain to another person, what you are or not doing.
I've taught for about 6 years, both life cycle nutrition and also global foods, and a lot of discussions around culture and generation conversations come up where sometimes you have to have uncomfortable but necessary boundaries or discussions with people who are very close to you because they love to share their opinions, and sometimes it's hurtful. And maybe up to a certain point, you've been able to take that in without commenting, but now it's affecting you in a way, like Melissa said. So I definitely want to empower anyone out there who feels like if they need to address something, that obviously, you know, try to do it in a respectful way, use language. There's definitely a lot of guidance out there, or you can reach out to somebody like Melissa to help with some of the language that you can use with that, because it can, you know, a lot of times I think it can be the person who's thinking they're just saying something, whether it's whatever, will come back with like, you know, stop being so sensitive, I was just making a joke, or what, I'm not allowed to tell you how I feel. And so obviously we want to just be respectful of those relationships, but you're allowed to protect yourself and not have to divulge anything about anything. So I appreciate that very much, Melissa. Thank you. Well, I'm keeping my eye on the time here. I do want to, because this could be technically a quite hot topic of discussion since we talked about too in our profession, there seems to be a lot of, anti and pro stances when it comes to weight discussions. Is there anything these days that you do feel is somewhat of a hot topic or maybe misinformation or disinformation that you would like to clarify?
The first thing that comes to mind when you ask that question is just that the kind of unfortunate divide sometimes in our field with dietitians that are maybe work with clients that have eating disorders or specialize in that and are more on the intuitive eating side of things, and those that are more weight loss focused. And so I consider myself kind of in the middle with that, which I feel like is probably not a popular opinion, but I do know other dietitians are in that similar space. And I always try to keep an even sort of, approach and attitude with all of it, because I think that we all practice differently. And I think when it comes to any area, I mean, I know weight loss, the area of weight loss, intuitive eating are kind of like big ones where there tends to be a little bit more of a divide, but that can happen in other areas of nutrition too, or we all have sort of our own background, and not only our own backgrounds, but maybe our own personal backgrounds too. And taking that into account, just like we all eat a certain way because of, personal things in our own lives. It's, that does play a role in how we practice to an extent, whether we realize it or not. And I think that it's just important to keep that in mind. And what I say is just to always, try to be kind and, and if you don't agree with someone, like, that's okay. Like, we can all agree to disagree, because I know that, when I used to work in clinical too, like myself and the other dietitians I worked with, like, we didn't always agree on maybe what we would recommend or just different approaches to things. I think that that's what makes our field unique. And that's why, the clients that choose to work with us may choose us because of our approach and that there's someone out there for everyone. I think that intuitive eating can be extremely helpful. And I use those, a lot of their sort of facets in my counseling too, even though a lot of my clients want to lose weight. I truly believe that they can also be intuitive eaters and be mindful eaters through that process. And I actually think that's really important to do.
I think this is such a fascinating discussion because this also helps empower and advocate for the patient or the client's end too, of making sure that you're working with somebody who uses language that is respectful, who makes you feel supported, who is part of truly what is known as your interdisciplinary team, right? We're all here to support you in whatever your wellness journey is and not make you feel belittled or degraded or anything like that. So if you have the ability to kind of like pre-interview some people or test people out, and whatever their approach is, if that speaks to you, then you found your population. You found the people that can help support you in that. And you're right, Melissa, a lot of us, I've mentioned before in some of these episodes, our training, our curriculum is pretty consistent across the board, no matter where we learn about this in our country. But ultimately, it's about the approach or the specialty or the niche that people end up taking after the fact of where they feel they can really specialize, because there's so few of us in the country in comparison to so many other healthcare providers, right? There's like 1 million medical doctors, 2 million registered nurses, and 112,000 dietitians. So we really try to see how we can better support and where we can hone in, but we can also take in a more generalized approach too, if anybody just needs, general guidance and not necessarily looking for something specific. So thank you for that. Want to ask you about the content creation or the content writing as well, because I have a couple of like wrap up questions. So I'm going to shift focus if it's okay with you. Share with us a little bit too. I mean, you didn't have a journalism background, or did you? Did you have any kind of writing experience, and how did you get into that?
Yeah, no, great question. So I don't have a journalism background at all. I always did, since I pursued becoming a dietitian, I did always sort of have a dream of like writing in magazines, but I really didn't think that it would be an actual big part of my career. It was kind of just a dream that I didn't think would actually happen. So then as I started my private practice, that's kind of like where I started my journey to being an entrepreneur, is in my private practice. But then over time, I started seeing a lot of dietitians in Facebook groups that were writers. And so I really started learning from them and started blogging on my own website, and then got a few like sample articles in place. I think my first sample article was on the Today's Dietitian website. Like, they used to have a blog. I think it was called Stone Soup. I don't know if they still have it. You've heard of that. Yeah. So they had that. So I wrote an article for there. And then, so I got a few samples under my belt and then really loved it. I really loved, like, it kind of uses the initial reason why I got it. I love to write. I find it very enjoyable. And I'm using like the scientific part of my brain, like digging deep into a topic. And I also am sort of an introvert. So I found like a good balance between the writing side and then spending time with clients one-on-one. So it was like a perfect balance. So once I got those samples in place, I started, you know, just applying for writing jobs. At first they were small, more like writing, editing jobs. And then over time I started really offering it as more of a core service. And I started writing for, other dietitians, like for their blogs who didn't have time to write or just didn't want to do that. Didn't want to spend their time doing that. And then, over time just started, again, as I started marketing myself as a writer and getting more experience, I learned a lot about SEO too, and search engine optimization and how to write in a way that where Google can actually find the content and find the articles so that whoever I was writing for, that you know, those articles would be seen and it would help their business. It would help their bottom line to either make more sales or, you know, get more people to view their website and their ads and all of these things. So yeah, I've just built it from there. And I, a lot of the writing I do is related to weight loss too. But not all of it. So that's another part piece that I like too, is that it really forces me to keep up on things too, on like hot topics and trends and, you know, maybe some areas that I don't always directly work with on a day-to-day basis. And I'm taking like a deep dive into that.
Anybody who might be a little bit apprehensive about taking that first step, because I had shared with you before, Melissa, that a lot of people who listen to us are students or dietetic interns. And even if your pathway in whatever profession you're in doesn't have to be wellness, but the point is if you do have a certain skill or a desire that you enjoy doing as a quote unquote, you know, side gig, that you can really strengthen that. So whether that's running, I run, therefore I am a runner. If it's writing, I write, therefore I am a writer. And you build up the experience and you maybe start, I don't know, attending events or meetups or just networking with people who are doing that as well as a career or part-time or whatever. And you start building up that skill set and you become, you know, more of a desirable, well-rounded candidate for when people need to pick and choose somebody with their expertise. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say great advice. Just kind of just dive right in and not to be afraid. And you know, you'll learn as you go. You don't have, it doesn't have to be perfect. Done is better than perfect.
That's just like we've been talking about, right? These small steps that you take consistently, keeping up on things, make you be more well practiced at certain things and you become a little bit more aware of what you're doing and fine tuning your expertise in that. Melissa, so let's switch again for a second. In your personal world, personal professional world, what is a typical or current week in the life of you? What are kind of like your schedule things, and also throw in there too, how you might lead and live by example in the wellness space?
Yeah, great question. So my typical week, I try to organize my schedule so that I have private practice client days and writing days. It doesn't always work perfectly, but I try my best to do that so that when I'm writing, I'm really kind of like in the zone of writing. So I have typically two client days where I see all my clients virtually. I do my charting and anything that's really client related. And then the other 3 days I'm focusing on writing and editing work. So a lot of times I'm editing or fact checking articles too that other people wrote. And really trying to do it that way because it helps me again to like get in the zone, make the most of the time, and really just be more effective with what I'm doing. And then in terms of like outside of work, I try to practice what I preach, of course. So I'm, you know, of course I'm not perfect, but I schedule out, you know, my meals just like I do with my work schedule. And I try to plan out, at least I'm just like a daily basis. Like I don't make my meals for the entire week. What works for me is just planning a day ahead of time. So like every night before as I'm cleaning up the kitchen, this is what I always tell my clients. I plan the next day so that I kind of know what's happening, make sure that I have meals and snacks kind of ready to go, or at least have things defrosted, so that it's easier each day when it comes time to actually make them. And then in terms of exercise, that is a huge part of my life. I've become much more consistent since I've started training for half marathons. So I have done three of them. And since I've been doing more long distance running and kind of doing more regular races in between, it definitely keeps me consistent. So I'm always like working towards something. So I fit that in whenever I can. And it's like early in the morning or later in the evening when my husband is home with the kids. It's kind of a non-negotiable, even if it's less time. It's like what I tell my clients, like anything is better than nothing. So I, even if I could just get 10 minutes in, that's better than not doing it at all.
The non-negotiable discussion comes up a ton. I have sacrificed a lot of things that I'm not happy about, and as you're speaking, I'm thinking I need to reintroduce those back into my life because it's not fair to me. It's not fair to me to give up the things that I want to prioritize. And so this is again a great time to encourage anyone who's listening. If you feel like you might have fallen off track in some of the things that you set up for yourself, here we're encouraging you try to get back on that so that you deserve it, right? The self-care discussion, like we said earlier,
Yes,
can
I
go on and on.
know.
It's
It's
important.
so important. And even if it's like what I usually say is just aim for 10 minutes a day. Like if that's all you can do to start, or on super busy days, like that's going to make a huge difference, especially in your health. And that translates into your other habits too.
Absolutely. It really is like the pillars that kind of keep us up and running. Melissa, in future you, where do you see yourself going, whether it's growing your practice or anything else that you might have goals for yourself? Do you mind sharing that with us?
Yeah, sure. So I see what I kind of see as my ultimate goal over the next couple of years is pursuing more of the writing side and growing more of the writing side of my business. Two big things is I would like to start working with the media more directly. So I've written for a lot of big publications, but I would like to more directly establish partnerships with different brands and working in the media and different avenues there. And then also, I'd love to write a book. So I think I have to figure out the details. I've written so many articles, but I haven't written an actual book yet. I am writing two chapters of a book for someone else. So I think that'll be a good place to start to kind of understand the process. But I would love to write my own someday
That is exciting. We cannot wait for
too.
that to come out. Is there
Thank you.
anything that you weren't, did we, I forgot to ask you, or anything else that you want to share before we wrap up?
I would say my biggest takeaway is just start small, start with one thing, start with 10 minutes of exercise, start with one, think about one food you can add to your diet to help give you energy. Oftentimes I say just start with breakfast, start with the first meal of the day to kind of get your day starting right. And then also for those that are dietitians or students out there, I would just encourage you to go for what your passions are and not be afraid, no matter how much experience you have. I feel like myself included, a lot of times, a lot of people wait to kind of start, because it feels scary, or feels like it's not the right time, but there's never a right time, right? Like there's always things that go in the way that can get in the way. But just kind of start small again with that too. So if you want to get into freelance writing or you want to start your own private practice, just start small, start it on the side, even if you have a full-time job. And it's okay if it takes a little while. That's okay. You're still going to be farther than you were if you didn't start at all.
If you look at what you could accomplish by the time next year comes around and you find yourself full of regret that, other things took the place of, then that is something you can kind of chip away at, right? You don't have to have these lofty goals that are going to be unsustainable or unrealistic. Just start small. I love that, Melissa. All right, my friend, I'm going to wrap up with my final two-part question, which is, what is on your plate today, Melissa, both in the figurative role of when we're done talking, what's the next thing that you're doing? And then what is the next meal that you will be eating?
So after this call, I am wrapping up a little bit of work and then I am going to pick up my kids and probably just have a relaxing night. I'm not working out today. I'm taking a rest day. So probably just Friday nights, we like to just relax, spend time with the family because the weekends tend to be busier with family stuff. So yeah, looking forward to that. And then my next meal, so tonight we are having a cauliflower pizza from Aldi. I don't know if you have Aldi in New York. Okay, yeah. So I recently started going back there. So their cauliflower pizza is actually really good because it's very crispy. So it tastes more like real pizza. So we're having that with like a chopped salad mix, and that's usually what we do on Fridays, just keeping it easy.
I love Fridays too. We usually have like takeout night, so we've been debating back and forth of what to have this evening. I've often joked I'm Italian, so I always feel bad like ordering out for pasta or something
I
Italian,
hear you.
but I don't feel like making it, so we might do that. Melissa, it's been a real pleasure getting to learn a little bit more about you. I wish you all the best. Thank you for everything that you do for our field, our profession, and for the people that you are helping on their journey. And I'm excited to see whenever your book comes out or whatever else you have in mind for yourself as future goals. Thanks again for being here.
Thanks so much, Dina, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.